It's time for Knox Talk, a behind-the-scenes look at the business side of college sports, featuring Paul Sickman from Knox Sports and Brandon Parks from the Vol Network. Now for today's show.
Welcome to another edition of Knox Talk. Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, and as always, I am joined by my good friend Brandon Parks from Rocky Top at the University of Tennessee. Good morning, Brandon.
Hey, good morning, Paul.
I know that Brandon did not want to talk about this last weekend very much with basketball, so we're going to move on from college sports, and we're going to go right into the pros, and we're going to shift to our good friend Sarah Barnes, who is with us from the Detroit Pistons. Sarah is the Senior Director of Corporate Partnership Sales with the Pistons and is in her eighth year. And we at Knox Sports have had the pleasure of working with Sarah for a number of years, and she is really good at customer-centric marketing. Her creativity is off the charts, and she finds solutions for our clients over and over again. So we'd love to have her. We're going to pick her brain today about the differences between college and pro. And Sarah has worked at both. She worked at Michigan State, working for the Spartan Fund for a brief period of time before she started with the Pistons. So welcome to Knox Talk, Sarah.
Thanks, Paul. Really happy to be here. Appreciate the intro.
Well, we're happy to have you. So I'm going to ask the first question, then we're going to let Brandon go. So I assume you had, you've been so successful up in the Detroit area. I'm sure you've had multiple opportunities with college sports. They probably reached out to you and said, hey, come here and do this. But you stayed with the Pistons. So what about that environment has really made you want to stay there and sell the pros?
Well, thank you for the kind words. It's, you're right. I've had a really incredible journey here with the Pistons. I've really essentially most of my professional career has been spent here, and I've spent time in different departments here. And I think that's been such a great part of my journey, is being able to continue to grow and kind of make a big difference across the organization and do more impactful things kind of the longer that I'm here. You know, I think there's certainly that opportunity with collegiate sports, but it just as an example, here I am as the Senior Director of Corporate Partnership Sales, started, selling tickets, worked my way up into a position where now I have the whole team, right, that reports into me and that I get to help kind of watch their journey and help them grow as sellers as well. And I think the other thing is, look, a big part of working in sponsorship, at least from my perspective, is not just who you're working for, the organization, the team, the college. It's also, what opportunity, especially in a sales role, do you have to sell, right? And I think for me, with the Pistons, there's been a really incredible journey about our move from the suburbs to the city of Detroit. I'm in a position now where we are actively prospecting and selling a new jersey patch partner. So there just continues to have been a lot of really unique opportunities here that, quite honestly, I tell folks, I'm surprised I'm still here at times. I never would have kind of planned this for myself, but I think that it's just a journey that has continued to provide. And I think that's a big part of, or you can give a lot of credit to the fact that I'm working for a professional team in the Big Four with a lot of resources behind it.
Yeah.
Sarah, could you talk about, one, what is the office makeup from the sponsorship division with the Pistons? What does your sponsorship team look like relative to sellers that you have actively on the street, to your fulfillment team, strategist, et cetera? And then if you could contrast that against maybe the setup that you had at Michigan State when you were there.
Sure. Happy to, Brandon. I think that, as I just mentioned, obviously tons of resources. We do have a pretty robust team. I think the Pistons organization, as far as how our sponsorship team is structured, is relatively reflective of what you see across professional sports, especially in the NBA. So as you kind of alluded to, we do have a sales group and what we call partnership engagement or partnership activation. It's kind of a lot of words for the same thing, but fulfillment, activation, partnership marketing, all kind of the same bubble of making sure that what we promise in a contract actually happens is kind of the long and the short of it. And then in between, we also have a department that we call Partnership Solutions. So it's a small and mighty, lean and mean team that is responsible for a lot of the creative approach that we take with our presentations, our kind of our marketing materials, our sales materials, our inventory management, our ideation with other departments to understand kind of what new things could we sell, what things are we doing in game that could be a sponsorable opportunity. that really kind of is their universe. So three separate departments. And as far as the number of folks, we've got six full-time sellers, including myself, some senior, some junior. As far as how we're structured right now, the junior sellers are on my team. And then we've got a vice president of sales and a vice president of partnership engagement. Over on the partnership engagement side, you've got a counterpart to me who kind of oversees the group and activates a couple of our big partners. And then a group of about eight full-time people over there. So I think they each have somewhere from 10 to 15 accounts in a given season that they're responsible for making sure they go above and beyond to not just ensure the contract is executed effectively, but that we continue to establish really great long-term relationships with our partners. Paul is a really great example of that, of how many years we've been able to work both with Knox Sports and the brands that they represent. So a really important part of our business is the relationship building on the partnership engagement side. But yeah, so it's pretty standard. Obviously, that's just our department, and we certainly do get support from across the organization. Marketing, community relations, legal, ticket sales, kind of everybody, right? I think that that's a really cool part of selling sponsorship in professional sports, is just the true collaboration. It's like the ultimate team project in college, or group project, right? It's every day. So that's sort of our reality here.
So Brandon, would you just quit if you had that many workers? You just work a couple hours a day and just kind of go home and back off? Because I mean, you know, if you had eight people out there executing for you, I mean, what would you do with your time?
Yeah, that's the thing that hit to me as far as what Sarah was explaining is the activation team is larger than the sales team. Right. And you see that a lot in professional sports. And I will tell you, college sports maybe was somewhat behind in the activation and fulfillment positions within the sponsorship sales teams. And I still think we're playing catch up in a lot of ways. But you probably would agree with this. The importance of that activation team cannot be understated, because it really takes, obviously, the sales team to go out and cultivate the business. But then if we can't activate when it comes renewal time, we have no chance.
100%. And for us, the way that we're, and this is not every single team as far as what is standard practice, it really is based on the talent that you have. But for us, our activation team is responsible for renewals. So it's important that they don't just activate, but can ask for the sale. It's two very different skill sets sometimes, where, you know, for me, I think that while I've been in a position where I have had to lean in from an activation side, my skill set is much better suited for the sales, new business, kind of bringing folks to the table and having conversation on that side of kind of our overall partnership journey process, right? And we require that team to not be able to just make sure that the partnership's really happy, or that the partner's really happy and the partnership is going well, but that they are sellers and they are asking for the sale. And as we can all know here, that can feel very different. So it's no small task, that is for sure.
But that's also, you know, we feel like, you know, from our perspective, we talk about this. I think sometimes it's a weakness too, because you guys have not just the Pistons, every pro organization has so much turnover in the 23-year-old to 30-year-old range, right? Every single organization, sports organization, has this problem. Having kids that are 22 to 30, just out of school, they feel like being somewhere 2 years is a lifetime. It's really, really difficult to keep them. And so, Sara, your role, and you've done a great job of this certainly with us, is you have to stay somewhat involved. You can't turn it over to those junior chipmunks, because if you do, you're in danger of losing a client. Sure. Because those people may or may not be here in 6 months. So
no,
you've always stayed involved. And so that has got to be a challenge, because yes, you want to empower your young people to do it, but in the pro environment, probably even more acutely than the college environment, they're bouncing.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think that, I mean, we follow that trend, right? Unfortunately, that has happened here too. And it's very common, it's not just an individual team or organization issue. As you said, it's pretty standard across the across the industry. And I think for us, we take an approach of what we call being sticky. So we really try to make sure that there's more than just one or two relationships in the organization, right? You know, for every single partner, it is a very, it sounds very methodical and not genuine, but it was really coming from a genuine place of like, hey, where are the relationships? And let's not forget about those. Let's continue to foster those. And I think that's the best, my favorite part of my job is while I get to do and put together some really incredible partnership platforms that quite honestly are bigger than me and bigger than all of my teammates. And we can do some really incredible things here. The relationships are ultimately the reason why I love doing what I'm doing, because I think as you and I know, Paul, at a certain point when it comes time, whether it's for renewal, upsell, new sale, you know, if you can really lean on the relationship, it's so important. So as you said, yes, you have to be mindful of the inevitable reality of turnover, and you can't just completely disconnect. I think there are many things that can be led and empowered by a junior person or one of the folks on our engagement team, even if there is turnover, because ultimately, as long as there is enough connection and visibility, you can still empower them, regardless of who it is, to execute on a lot of these tasks, right? Because they're hired to do that job. And as long as they're doing their job while they're here, if we can keep maintaining the relationship with our partners elsewhere, with some of the folks that have been here for a while or have a path to be here for a long time, it's a good strategy for us, and it ultimately works out. But it's certainly not without effort, right? Yeah. Because the turnover does, it's difficult. In a perfect world, if I could keep the same group together for the next 10 years and we all were content with what we're doing today, that would make partnerships super easy as far as relationship building goes, because there'd be consistency. But that's just obviously not the reality. Everybody, you know, if there's a good opportunity to move on, if there's a good opportunity to take on more here, you know, things change, right? And you just gotta kind of go with it. I think change is the most constant part of working in sports, so you got to embrace it.
Okay, with that in mind, obviously retention's important. So how, I'm assuming culture would be very important to you and your team. So how would you describe maybe the culture of the sponsorship sales team and the activation team?
Yeah, it's a great point. I think that having a really strong culture is crucial. I think that we are literally just finishing an insane month of March where we had, I want to say, guys, it was like 12 or 13 home games, which for us in NBA, not normal, right? It was really backloaded. The in-season tournament kind of changed everybody's schedule this year. So there was just, it felt a little different and it felt a little bit more accelerated at the end with the number of games that we had. And I share that context because we are at work a lot. We were at work a lot this last month. I think there was a span over 3 weeks where I had one day where I didn't have something to do for work. Now they weren't all full days. Of course, we are mindful of making sure that if, you know, for example, I didn't come until 10 o'clock today because we had a game last night. We really are good about being mindful of workload and all of that. But for us, it's like, you got to not just have relationships externally with our partners, but you have to establish good relationships internally. And I think we've always taken the approach of how do we move together? Obviously, there's individual members, there's individual targets, there's individual partner relationships and things that, you know, the individual journey surely still matters, but how can we be really collective, share thoughts, share resources, help each other kind of grow together? And I think that we're really focused on establishing really genuine relationships with the people around us. We spend so much time together that's just really important, right? And I think a big part of that is not just having good dialogue and really getting to know each other while we're working, you know, while we're working on projects together, whatever it might be. But also just having like a good mutual respect for people's differences too. I think we have a good understanding of where everybody sort of kind of fits on the team, kind of, you know, we got the person that, hey, I need help with a quick mock-up. We got the Photoshop person. We got this, right? And if we can kind of share those resources, we end up being better together. So that's always been our take, is like really try to motivate the team in a way that's the team goal. Like, yes, again, there are individual bonuses and things like that from a sales perspective, but there is a big emphasis on the team number, which I think makes everybody think about it more like that. And ultimately it helps the culture quite a bit, if that answers your question.
So, Sarah, take the gloves off for a second. So you are competing. You're not only competing with the other pro teams in town, you're also competing with Michigan and Michigan State. And so I want you, because this is, we have a lot of college-centric stuff in this podcast, tell us a little bit about what you guys do with the Pistons, maybe from a sales technique perspective or just from a competitive standpoint to win when you're competing against Michigan or Michigan State. and just kind of, tell us what specifically some things that you've done there. Because the reality is you guys are going to be more expensive in most cases, right? Or maybe that's wrong on my percent, but most pro teams are going to be more expensive just inherently. So what do you guys do sales perspective wise, and how do you win?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great, great question, because we commonly say that we don't just have our peers in Detroit that we ultimately are competing against at times. But we certainly have two other pro teams in Michigan and Michigan State, when you look at especially football, basketball, and obviously there's other great sports too. I think both of them made a pretty big run in the Frozen Four, right? Hockey. There's a lot there, right? I think for us, we really lean in heavy on data and analytics to help us really understand who our fans are and really own them. Because at the end of the day, the NBA fan, the Pistons fan, is unique in comparison to the other teams. And so for us, we really focus on our strategy on, okay, here's who we're serving, here's who we're interacting with, whether it's in arena, social, TV viewership, we are able to measure it all. And I think that's also a benefit of the pro sports experiences, the resources that we have from a business intelligence standpoint too, and all the data that we have at our fingertips to help us prospect, all of the different things that data can help us do. But for us, we really try to have a good understanding of this is the Pistons fan and this is how they differ from all the other opportunities around us. And now let's use that to go find brands that align with that. Who ultimately wants to interact with our fans, because you can't, there are certain partners, you look at somebody like a Kellogg's, right? Kellogg's has never been a partner of the Pistons. They obviously have a pretty significant platform here in the state of Michigan. They're all over college sports. I have tried that. I'll never win that. That's their demo. That's who they want. They really want to ensure that they're aligning their brand with that demo, the college student, the college fan, right? And for us, it's just, okay, well, we've done some things in the community with them. They're great people. It's just one of those things that at the end of the day, that makes more sense for their strategy, and that's okay. Go fishing again and find somebody else that might better align with the audience that you serve. And that's really kind of our motto when it comes to differentiating. I think the other piece too is that we're very fortunate that the NBA is very global in nature. So we get kind of the coattails or the extended benefit of all the incredible things that they do at a league level that ultimately benefit us uniquely, right? Like, we had an opportunity to play in Paris, a part of the global games last season. We did the same thing in Mexico City back in 2019. There's some really, really incredible opportunities that partners really only get to experience if they're a part of the NBA experience, right? And so we really try to find those things that help us differentiate in comparison to those around us.
Brandon, when's your next trip to Paris with your sponsors?
I'm waiting on Sarah to invite me. Sarah, let's cut to the million-dollar question. How high maintenance is Paul Sickman and Knox Schwartz to deal with?
They're great. The thing I love about Paul is he shoots it straight, and I wish every partner did, because we could be much more efficient in our just our efforts, right? I think I think that's why our partnership has worked well, Paul, is like, we cut the crap and we're like, this is what it is. This is what we need to do. How are we going to make it happen? And I think that really comes down to the mutual trust that Paul and I have and with each other's teams that we've really built over the years, that's what it all comes down to at the end of the day. Like, those are the best relationships. I'd rather it be really direct and just, here it is.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't help when she calls me and says, listen, I've got 3 minutes for a meeting.
Sometimes. Sorry, I had the same experience. I think it's something, it's a good takeaway. When clients can be more direct and honest, I can tell you as a brand representative, I can be a lot more effective and efficient,
Exactly.
And sometimes we all sell and we all play that sales game. And so when you can have someone that has that full transparency, it makes it a lot more easier on us to try to fill the goals and objectives and so forth and create a plan that's going to ultimately work. And that's one of the things that's been good about Paul, even though this is not going to turn into a Paul Sickman fan club podcast.
I understand.
At least for now.
I want to talk a little bit about kind of the perception, because I've always felt like the passion, and Sarah's going to disagree with this, but I felt like the passion of the college fan is unique, right? I mean, it's a year-round passion. It's tied. I mean, Sarah still bleeds green. She's a Michigan State alum, so she bleeds that. I get that. But what has always been kind of a truism until the last couple of years is that the college fan tended to root for a team and the pro fan tended to root for players. And that was just kind of the way it worked. I'm not saying they didn't root for teams, but NIL has kind of changed that dynamic a little bit because NIL has forced the college environment from a sponsorship perspective to look more at players. Sarah, I kind of talked about that perception and maybe if you agree with it or not, but in how that deals with when you guys sell and dealing with the passion and how do you separate yourself from the players a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is I do agree with that because I think that the college experience and the college fandom is uniquely that. There is nothing like an NCAA game. There just isn't. Brandon, I hate to bring it up. My husband went to the Elite Eight games or Sweet 16 games to the Elite Eight back on Friday at Little Caesars Arena. We were hosting Purdue, Tennessee, a few other folks. And, you know, just talking about the game day experience, you know, you look at a sellout Pistons game in comparison to an NCAA game, it feels very different. I mean, obviously, you've got the whole competing fandoms, most likely, or more often than not, right? But obviously Pistons too, you have really exciting moments where the crowd really gets into it. It's a close moment, but it's generally more of a, we're here, we're hanging out, we're watching our team, you know, with the exception of it being a very close game. Now that could also be typically a lot of these NCAA games are really close games, but there is something to be said for the college fandom that is uniquely that. I think the truth is we also recognize that we can't pretend that is what our fan experiences. I think that there are other benefits that come along with the sort of stardom followership fandom, because I think, look, at the end of the day, that is a strategy at the highest level with the NBA. They were kind of the first ones to really be like, you know what, we're going to lean into our stars. And I think, you know, you look at Giannis, LeBron, Luka, all, you keep going on and on. I think what really helps us, or what we see the benefit as a team that is going through a continued rebuild. Paul, I feel like we talked rebuild for years and years now, but I think we're finally on a path that, you know, could be really great for us. But with all that to be said, we haven't seen a dip at all in revenue or attendance. And I think that that is a major nod to the fact that the NBA and the sort of just people's fandom is on seeing some of these other players too. You know, it's still the NBA game and Giannis is in town, regardless of if they want to be there for the Pistons or not. I think there's always still that, oh, well, this is my hometown team. And obviously, if the Pistons ever get good again, you look at what happened with the Lions. Everybody was a Lions fan this year, right? And those same people, I think, were saying, same old Lions, SOL, for years and years and years prior, right? So I think that there is still a passion, but it is very much more connected to performance, which is why I think you've seen it at the pro levels. There's just such an elite level of game if you follow players that people, a basketball fan, really likes to watch good basketball. And I think that at the college level, they love when their team is great, but there's that personal, like, this is my school. I can't walk away from them. I mean, guys, Michigan State football, it's been a mess. I still love them, but whew, it's been tough. And you look at basketball too. I'd love to make another Final Four, but somehow we just can't find a way there. So, you know, I hear you guys. I think that it's really a fair point and honestly true and something that we have to keep in mind, but we have to also give credit where credit is due for some of the other benefits that come along with sort of promoting the stars. And I think that's why the college level has done it. I think look at what's happened with women's basketball, right? It is just insane to see. Right. I mean, Caitlin Clark is also insane, let's be honest. But you look at some of these other, there's so many folks, right?
Right. I mean, it's beyond team. It's morphed into a star-powered deal. I mean, you look at the headlines across everything. They talked about the four great players that played last night as opposed to the four teams that played last night. So it, 100%. You're right. It morphed. It went right past the college game into a pro look in terms of
it really did. Yeah. I mean, that was my takeaway, too, where, you know, everyone was talking, like, what a historic night for women's basketball. And I think, yeah, for women's basketball, because of the fact that we are seeing this transition of women's basketball, NCAA, all these teams to – look at these stars.
Right. And it's almost 1979, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, where it took college basketball to a new level because of two stars. And that's what last night felt like to me, is that it was, oh my gosh, we got Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark playing this game. And it was like, Yeah, but the teams are playing too, you know.
Well, and I think part of it too is that people like to have a story to root for or a player to get behind. There's something to be said where I think social media even comes into this. You know,
right.
Now I can love Caitlin Clark as a player, and I can follow her on social media, and I can follow, you know, the team that she will inevitably be playing for in Indiana in a couple of months. And, you know, there's things like that that you can ultimately kind of connect more with the player. And I think that that's really been a big piece of sort of just fandom with stars.
Okay. Awesome.
Well, I would say a key common takeaway, both for the college and professional game, winning cures a lot.
It sure does.
And winning creates passion and energy and environment around, whether it's a college game or it's a pro game. I will say I've always admired in the pro game from an NBA standpoint, just the experience of going to a game, the athletes. Television does not do it justice, just how incredible of an athlete an NBA player is, and to see the size and the length and the speed and all those things. And then you combine that with terrific experiences in the environment of the arena. Some of these arenas are extraordinary, and I'll give credit to the Nashville Predators in our state from a hockey standpoint. You are entertained from the moment that you scan your ticket until you exit the arena. And there happens to be a hockey game that's going on as well. Mm-hmm. And that's always been my key takeaway with really good professional experiences. It is just an overwhelming experience, regardless if it's a timeout in action or if it's actually during the event itself.
100%. And I think that's, first of all, I've been to a few Preds games. They're incredible. They do an incredible job. They're an incredible organization. And I think they've built really something really special down there. Same thing, like win or lose, it's packed, right? And they're having a great time. And I think that's kind of the point, right? I tell people all the time, you don't have to love basketball or even know basketball to enjoy a Pistons game. That's just it. There's things happening. We're also very fortunate that we're in an incredible, relatively new building. It's only, you know, 7 or 8 years old. It's really, really advanced as far as like the fan experience goes. We have incredible club spaces. We have incredible, you know, premium experiences. We have incredible experiences on the concourse. Like there's so many things that, as you said, that's sort of the motto now, right? I think that you'll start to see that more and more. I look at, you know, at Michigan State, the big investment that was made in the Breslin Center. There's a whole pavilion kind of on the front half of the building that's all kind of just like a museum. It's like Michigan State memorabilia, and it gives fans an opportunity to really connect with the history, know more about the team, and just have something to do, right? That's not just grabbing a hot dog and sitting in your seats. Right. So I think that will continue to happen more and more.
Sorry, that was incredible. Thank you so much. And we are going to be back in 2 weeks because we're not done with you. We've got more questions to ask. We're going to dive a little deeper into the sales techniques that you use to have success. Brandon and I at Knox Talk, thank you so much. And we'll see all of you and Sarah again.